All right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, and we've got lots to talk about. Taking your phone calls at 333-2665. As I said, plenty going on. We head towards another football weekend. The IU Hoosiers off their bye week face a top 10 Iowa team, one of the best defenses in the nation, on Saturday, 3:30 on ESPN. So a big challenge there for the Hoosier football team with a good Iowa, undefeated Iowa team coming to town. The Colts are all kinds of messy right now. They go 3.5 quarters looking like maybe the worst team in the NFL, make a drastic comeback in the end of the fourth quarter to send it to overtime, kick a field goal in overtime, but also give up a field goal and then give up a game-winning field goal, lose the game, and in the aftermath, they go ahead and fire their offensive coordinator. Naturally, Pep Hamilton now on the sideline. Rob Chudzinski will be your new offensive coordinator, all heading into a short week before they face the number one defense in the NFL in the Denver Broncos, who, oh, by the way, has that guy at quarterback that Colts fans know so well. That's Sunday night here on Sunday afternoon, rather, here on WGCL. But before we get into football, a first time last night for the IU basketball Hoosiers to face on the hardwood a team that's not wearing the same jerseys as they are. The Ottawa University team from, Ottawa, Canada, the number one team ranked in Canada, came to town. And this is a team that was the only team to beat the Hoosiers on their swing through Canada last year out of seven games, a game that the Hoosiers gave up 109 points to a team that likes to shoot the three-pointer. They came in last night, and the Hoosiers won with a late pull-away, 82-54. Lots to talk about from what we saw last night. And Glass, the first thing that stands out to me, and I'm not going to say that it means that the defense is 10 times better than it was last year, because I don't think that's the case. But I don't think you can come out of there without saying there's at least a better effort, more energy on the defensive side. And to me, 109 points last year, 54 points given up this year to this generally the same team. Look, we're looking for little things when you talk about an exhibition, not necessarily big statements. And that's at least a start, is how they played and, in particular, how many points they give up, because that's what matters at the end of the day.
I think a couple things that jump off the page to get things started was Indiana rebounds better. Indiana looks like a better basketball team. They have better basketball players, I think, than maybe they've had the last couple of years. You didn't see guys getting lost on things. You didn't see guys running around kind of wondering what was happening. Do they still play too fast at some time? Sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely right. Do they still try to make maybe that one play that's probably not the best percentage play? Sure.
A little crazy.
But you got to have something to work on, don't you? But you saw last night, we talked about it on Monday, the ball movement is excellent. You're very difficult to guard when the ball moves like that. And the ball doesn't die anywhere on the court. That's the other thing that's going to be a huge, huge, huge factor going into this season. And what do I mean by that is, Perea catches it 17 feet from the basket. Stop.
Yeah.
Just put the handbrake on and stop. Well, that didn't happen anymore. You saw Biefeld shooting 19-footers. First shot of the game is what? Thomas Bryant for three.
Sure.
There you go. Well, that just tells everybody what this team is about, and there's not a place where it dies. And you heard the kids talking after the game, especially Biefeld. He's like, everybody out here can shoot it.
Yeah.
It's a really good problem to have. So the offense won't get bogged down. It should naturally move. It shouldn't come to the just throw it to Yogi 35 feet from the basket with 4 seconds left. They don't have that issue anymore. And that was another component of the Big Ten championship team. That team never had problems scoring the basketball. You had 4,000-point scores when it was all said and done. The game never got clogged up. It never got sticky.
You could go to anybody at any time.
It wasn't the sand pit where you're running. You're trying to go somewhere, but you can't get anywhere.
You didn't have to force something that wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, and they're still doing that, which I think the more they play, they're going to understand they don't have to do that. The great pass, the no-look pass, that's fine to entertain in the exhibition, and I'm all for entertaining basketball. It doesn't have to be boring, results-driven. It does have to be crowd-pleasing. They're not called the hurrying Hoosiers because they stood there and developed a four-corner offense. So that was check mark number one. Number two, I thought the effort rebounding and getting after the basketball. Talked about on Monday a little bit and last week that Bielefeld's going to get minutes here for a couple of reasons. One, he's a smart player. He's already been through the fast-paced physicality of the Big Ten, so he gets that. You don't have to teach him that. Number two, he's a junkyard dog.
Yeah.
He's in the middle of everything.
He's in the middle,
he's
right?
tipping balls out. That's he's right. tipping steals. Four steals yesterday.
Yeah.
He's getting junk rebounds.
Eight.
He's the best finisher at the basket on this team by 150 miles.
Well, he's
right
got
now.
The strength, yeah, no question.
And he does. He's got a nice shot.
Yeah.
There's nothing that in his game. I'm not making him out to be an All-American power forward.
No,
but
no,
what
he
I'm saying is
he doesn't have to be.
He gets in the guts and likes to be in there. Colin Hartman prefers to play on the wing and out in the corner.
He's the guy that you'd want you hope and expect to see more rebounds out of him than points, honestly.
Because he knows that's his job. He knows how to get position. He knows all the tricks of the trade of what the officials look for and don't look for. That's a huge advantage.
And this team rebounded pretty well last year for its lack of size. But what you saw, I think, last night is you saw effort from everybody in the rebounding up front, but also on the defensive side.
They rebounded decently last year because of their athletic ability. They rebound better now because they have legitimate size
up front,
and legitimate height.
Yogi and Blackman and Johnson did a pretty good job rebounding last year. They were non-existent
because they were asked to. Now they don't have to be asked to. And now what happens? You got a shorter shot clock. You get guys out leaking out a little bit because you have bodies in there that can rebound.
Yep.
Troy Williams should be able to get six rebounds by rolling out of bed just based on his effort in going after
and
the ball.
And he does. He hits them hard.
He does. And again, Bryant's tipping the ball. Williams is tipping the ball. Bielefeld's tipping the ball. They're keeping things alive. Indiana, it's not an easy out on the defensive side of things. Defensively, would they close the game with a 23-0 run at some point? So they didn't score on 13 or 14 possessions, I think Coach Crean was talking about in his press conference. Yeah, that's important, and that is a step in the right direction because you didn't want to sit there at 109-101 and then have to explain why a year later
it's
not any better.
Thing. That's
exactly right. So Canada, the team Ottawa, had 9 games under their belt. They'd played 3 games on the weekend. They had no leg shooting jumpers, 5 of 26 from 3. So maybe you caught them on a good night. I think some of that had to do with Indiana as well, playing well, and then having to slow Indiana down. If you're not scoring and you have to stop a team that scores a lot,
well,
that's
a
huge advantage for the Hoosiers.
They played 3 times on the weekend, but let's give Indiana credit. I mean, they were up and down the floor, left, right, up and down. I mean, they got after it out there to outrun them.
The
team's tired to begin with. Let's take advantage of that and make them run even more.
And they didn't because Indiana played too fast. They had 13 turnovers. They didn't.
It was out of control
almost,
a lot
they
of
played
times.
Right
no, no question. But they tried to get them moving and tried to take advantage of
Try to wear them down, and they did. And obviously Indiana was the fresher team in the second half. They cut their turnovers in half down to 6. That helps. And as Joe Smith pointed out this morning with me, they didn't score any points off any of the 6 Indiana turnovers. So, again, a huge that means your defense is doing something as well. But with a team that shoots with that kind of frequency, when you shoot that many threes, you get that many rebounds going to weird spots, and you didn't see them get killed on the glass. It wasn't a very big Ottawa team either. That should have been a game they handled on the rebound side of things.
They're an offensive team. They're a three-point shooting team more so than they are size. Let's talk, though, about the Hoosiers. I mean, they come out with the size, and really for a lot of the game had what amounts to 2.5 to 3 forwards types in the game, but you hear the talk after the game that they want to be positionless.
Well, who talked about that 2 weeks ago?
Well, I don't know.
John called and I said, there are no positions anymore.
Yeah.
Which one are you going to be your best basketball player?
Well, I'll ask you a different question after the break about that, but let's talk about the size here because, again, we didn't have the size. We lost a lot of size in the offseason for reasons that we didn't really want to have to, but we did. But they come out in this game and you got Troy at the 3, you've got Bielefeld out there. I like this lineup in particular for the main part being Max Bielefeld helping out Thomas Bryant, and we could talk about Bryant in a minute also, but I like having the backup in there. I like having the other guy in there. I like having the help side in there because as a freshman big guy, he's a presence in there defensively. You saw that, but he's going to have some mistakes that he's going to have. Also, you got a guy like Bielefeld that can be that junkyard dog to help him kind of ease into it somewhat.
Crean didn't get to the first TV timeout without making a substitution. He did. He took Bryan out, 6 points and 2 rebounds. He was doing everything.
There you go.
And he pulls him out. So don't get wrapped up in what they're going to do because the substitution flow is it's almost like a hockey game.
Yeah,
it's
was.
Constant churn, in and out, in and out, in and out. And if that's the thing going forward, and who's your first sub last night? Juwan Morgan, interesting choice as well. Not interesting in a bad way, just interesting that he earned into that spot. But you have so much churn going through, and you have so many guys, and everybody's just bumping around. That's why it's positionless basketball, because you don't play the 5 guys for any extended length of time together. They're getting 2 or 3 minute bursts at a time, and we know they want to keep Blackman's knee calm. They right. know you want to keep Thomas Bryant's foot, whatever is bothering
That's
him,
right.
calm. I get all that. Morgan's got a shoulder harness on.
Hartman's
everybody saw
got
it on TV. Hartman plays 17 minutes when he couldn't even get on the court on yeah. Saturday for yeah. a scrimmage. So there's a lot of that churn going on this time of year, and guys are auditioning. They're auditioning for roles, and it comes back to Bielefeld for me. That's what a fifth-year graduate transfer should do. Do your job. He's doing it. He leads by – he doesn't even know he's leading by example, mm-hmm. but he's not taking dumb shots. He's not taking guys off the dribble. This is just two games I've watched him play. He plays like a senior yep. should play, and that makes everybody's job easier because they don't have to cover him on defense. They don't have to bail him out on offense. They don't have to tell him to slow down,
exactly
stop,
right.
and everything else. And that's a piece of a puzzle. Indiana, how young has this team been for the last 2.5 years? That's all you've heard. And now it sticks out, and you see why when you have a player of that ability and experience on your team.
Well, let's add to that, too. He's also not a liability on the offensive end. I mean, he's,
the ball
you're not going to, yeah, you're not going to ask him to shoot the ball a whole ton, but he can is the point there.
He can step out,
stretch out. Yeah,
guess
exactly.
what happens? Then that gives who down low some more room to
that's
operate?
Exactly
Big
right.
fella. Big
Thomas
fella
Bryant.
Needs a little more beat on his
we'll
bones.
We'll talk about Thomas Bryant's performance last night, among other things, when we get back from the break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Got all kinds of football over the course of the week and the weekend. Tomorrow night, NFL football, Cleveland at Cincinnati. And Friday, we've got Terre Haute North coming to town for the sectional championship to face the South Panthers down on the south side. Chalk Talk 6:30, 7 o'clock is the kickoff on Friday. We'll have the LSU-Alabama game on Saturday night starting at 7:30 for pregame. And then Denver at Indianapolis on Sunday, 3:25 pregame there for the Bob Lamy Colts Radio Network broadcast. And then we'll have Philadelphia at Dallas on Sunday night. Before we get to the gridiron, though, still on the hardwood, the Hoosiers win last night at home against Ottawa, the one team from their Canada trip last year that defeated them 109-101. So 109 points last year, 54 this year. Is a big difference. Let's talk about Thomas Bryant.
Sorry, 18 threes to 5 threes.
Oh, well, exactly. Let's talk about Thomas Bryant on both ends and then kind of meld the defensive end then into the defense for this team. But on the offensive end, you and I talked on Monday, and we talked about what it looks like from his IQ standpoint and his ability to pass the ball. And you said something to me either on the air or off the air. I'd like him to be more aggressive offensively. He was much more aggressive with the ball in this particular game offensively.
Yeah, and I think the matchup helped him, too. He wasn't going up against he saw fresh meat in the in the box, and he went after
and
it,
he
which
took
was
advantage
great,
of it.
Which was kind of interesting to see that first shot being a three. But now that he's got that out of the way, we don't have to worry
that's
about
that.
That's
the Noah Vonleh schedule, where the first shot always has to be a three, and then you go inside for the rest of the game.
There you go. And the great news was the opportunities. And I was thinking about this today. Do you ever remember Vonleh or Cody Zeller getting 16 shots in a game? Ever?
Not very often. Not very often.
And usually if it's that many shots, you rip the game off and you said, oh, yeah, when he had 34
8,
against
10, Michigan. 12. I mean, those in this
now,
offense.
It would be 8 or 10, 12 and 8 or 10 free throws as well.
Yes.
That's when the big games came. That's usually what they were. But to see a true freshman.
Well, let's be fair. I mean, Thomas Bryant probably had 3 or 4 of those were in putbacks where he had to put back to himself. And he had to. I don't mean somebody else's. I mean, he had to put him back his
I'm
own, which
saying.
Is great, but. That racks him
Cody
up pretty quick,
and Noah
too.
Could have done that as well.
No, you're exactly right.
But the
you're
point
exactly
was,
right.
he was aggressive, and you saw it, and he doesn't give up on plays, and he plays hard, and he runs the court. You saw the alley-oop he caught. He was the first man down the court on that, went up and got it from Williams. A great pass there, one of Troy's better decisions of the night. And finishing against the smaller people around there is just going to get stronger as he grows on because he'll get stronger with his hands. He'll get stronger with his arms. You do get hit in there. Yes, you get fouled all the time. Just stop with the fouls already. Bryant needs to take two hands, go up and dunk the basketball. I don't care about his left hand, Tom. I don't care about that. Go up and dunk the basketball. Guys are 6'7", 6'8", in there. Take it up through them and get it. It'd be great. You know what? I saw Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on TV the other day, and this will make my point. He ruined careers for 40 years of basketball because every coach thought each player should shoot a skyhook.
Right.
Kareem does it.
Yeah.
Well, because Kareem's Kareem.
He's
that,
the best.
That's why he does it.
Right.
And we need a baby hook
plus
here.
Plus, he wasn't allowed to dunk at one point in time.
We need a half hook there, and we need this and this.
They outlawed the dunk for him.
They did. They outlawed it. You couldn't do it. And you don't need all. It's great to have seven tools. It's great to have all of that. But when you get the ball around the basket, Shaquille O'Neal couldn't shoot anything.
Yeah.
He went up and through you.
Oh,
and I'm not asking
is huge.
I'm not asking Bryant to do that, but Bryant, that's going to be the next step of his game, because obviously the competition gets better in Maui. Obviously the competition gets better after Bellarmine, where you get to bigger physical
right
conference, what do they call it? Power five conference guys mm-hmm. who aren't real impressed by a 6'10", 240-pound guy because they're 6'9",
they're
and 235 themselves, and they're 4 years older,
right?
And they're 5 years older, and they're 3 years older. So that's the thing. Bryant's finishing will come with the left hand and the right. That's fine. But him getting strong to the basket, taking in, he has no problem shooting free throws. You saw his form last mm-hmm. night. He has no problem handling all that. Stronger with the ball in the post, getting after it. That is going to be a part of the game where Indiana gets easy baskets. We got all these shooters. We got all this other stuff going on. But the good news was he missed some bunnies and went back and put them in or went back and got them.
You mentioned the shots for Cody Zeller and Noah Vonleh. One thing that always surprised me about Cody Zeller his freshman year was he was not statistically more of a rebounder than he was. 11 rebounds in this game for Thomas Bryant. Yep. Again, it's Ottawa, but comes right out the board. Out of the shoot. Yeah, I mean,
combined.
Looking to hit the boards.
And a lot of them offensive, too.
Yeah, well, exactly.
He had 18
right.
offensive rebounds, I think, for the game.
And he had six himself.
Right. Now,
so it's double-double.
Three of those
night.
Could be the I miss. I tip it.
Right.
But again, it's the effort. It's going back after it. It's not, darn it, I missed. I'm putting my head down. It's
right.
I'm in beast mode around the goal and get it.
Them too, so.
Go in there. And again, that's where he is going to eat. Thomas Bryant doesn't need to shoot 15 to 18-foot jump shots to make Indiana good. He needs to score from 3 feet and in and make his foul shots to make Indiana good. Farrell, Blackman, Zeisloft. Help me out with those are the guys, Robert Johnson. Those are your mm-hmm. mid-range to three-point guys. You don't need everybody moving out of there. You don't need Thomas Bryant squaring up a guy at the three-point line and trying to spin move into the lane, turn the ball over.
And look,
we
can point to a lot of decisions and bad plays that Troy Williams make. You can also point to the good ones. The speed and the energy has just got to be there. One thing that was interesting about that, though, coming off of Hoosier hysteria and winning the 3-point contest. You know how many 3-point shots Troy Williams put up?
One.
Zero.
I thought, he had 19. Yeah, then he had a 19 and a half footer where he was close.
So, I mean, he did not go out there and suddenly think, I am, I don't know who you want to call Steph Curry or somebody like that.
The fire.
He went to the basket.
And the
he did
ice
what he does.
With Troy Williams is going to be what makes him that player will not change.
Yeah.
It's situationally. It's time and score. It's down and mm-hmm. distance, whatever you want to call it. That's the key. When you're up 20 points, I don't care what happens.
Right.
Give it a little showtime. Yeah. Do it. Mm-hmm. No problem. When it's 68-68, do you need to be jacking up your first three of the game? I don't know.
Probably not.
Probably. If that's the shot clock's down, yeah.
Well, sure.
That's time and space.
Sure.
That's understanding down and distance or whatever it is. But when he plays within himself at his speed. Now, I'm not talking about anybody else's speed. Mm-hmm. At Troy Warp, when Troy goes, he goes.
Right.
And that's what makes him unguardable. That's
yes,
what makes him
absolutely.
A bear. And you're going
to
get
a lot of fun to watch.
You're
going
to get a turnover or two out of that, and you're just going to have to understand that and
six
live with
turnovers,
it.
Four assists. I mean, again, to me, the four assists is a big part for the guy.
Right, moving
they put the ball in his hands a little bit.
And Indiana's assist numbers, I'm telling you this, will jump dramatically this year because they have multiple guys that can score.
Absolutely.
That's going to be
18 assists.
That's going to be a number
that's
going to
be. And
if
they finish on the break like they did last night, and
sure.
they missed a few,
they
too.
They missed plenty.
They missed a few on the break, but they also got down there and finished.
A few around the rim that they're all not going to go in. But you'd like to see him take advantage, especially around the rim. If he's going to miss jumpers, yeah, I can live with that because he has to expand that part of his game to make the rest of his game even better. And contested jump shots are one thing. Shooting open 17, 18-footers, yeah, he can't drive all the time. There's going to be guys in other teams that have Isaac Haas,
right,
and AJ Hammonds, et cetera.
Look, this next part is a little philosophical, but I didn't pay a lot of attention to the re-emphasis of referees on defense.
OG.
on defensive guarding here, because what you
quickly.
Saw obviously last night, and it was surprising to me, because again, I this is my fault. I hadn't paid this much attention to this part of it. Was the inability to body people at all
not
when they've
anymore.
Got the ball and
when
moving
you have the ball,
the moving screens. We see this every single game repeatedly. I don't know if the Big Ten's worse than anything else, but it's always you see it all the time. The physicality with the guy with the ball and the the pick and roll type of thing, that was called repeatedly and consistently last night. So my first question is, when you get up to Wisconsin and you're in Madison in February or whenever the heck that game is or wherever we are,
they don't foul.
Are they going to continue to call these sorts of things, because you see it all the time?
By then, the luster of the newness will have worn off in the Big Ten season. Don't you worry about that. It's a point of emphasis. You'll see it. OG Anunoby was one of the victims of it. Mm-hmm. Troy even was. He bodied a couple guys going to the lane.
Offense, we got the benefit of it. It's more my angle of that
particular
case.
Guess what?
Case.
If you have guys that can shoot free throws like Blackman and Yogi Ferrell, it's free money.
Absolutely.
It's free money at the line, and that's another thing that will help Indiana. But defensively, they have to be smarter. You have to accept being beat.
Yeah.
That's fine. You know why? You have Bryant back there. That's going to change opinions getting into the lane.
Sure.
That's going to change decisions and force decisions to be made. Now, if you get beat, it's not give up on the play and run out to the perimeter. Well, it's go help
and here's,
down below.
Here's my theory about this, too.
But don't reach.
How difficult is it nowadays to stay in front of somebody for 30 seconds, in a shot clock? How much is this going to benefit the fact that this is a team on offense that's tried so hard to get up and down the floor and score points as its first objective? I think it lends even more to being that type of team. Not that you have to try to outscore everybody and not play defense at all, but you're going to give up points is the whole point, and maybe more than you're used to giving up, for the good defensive teams because of these rules.
I look at it this way. The Indiana's best defense is offense, is scoring.
Yeah.
And them putting pressure.
And I think it's more so with these
opponent.
If these things are continued to be focused on.
Are the rules of football, are the rules of basketball, anything helping defense? No,
they never are.
It's helping offense. And if Indiana just gets a little bit better of staying focused, there's less time to be focused. Only 30 seconds now instead of 35 seconds. There's less time to be focused. It's a thing.
Yeah, sure.
It's a thing. You want to track numbers and stuff. That's a thing. It should help. And the other thing it should help is, guess when you usually play really good defense? When you're winning.
Oh, yeah.
Easier,
fun then.
Easier to run back.
It's fun then.
Easier to sprint. Get the tips from behind. Block
shots.
You get
to high five guys before the other team carries the ball down.
Block shot
nice
when
shot,
a guy
dude.
Doesn't see you coming. Again, throw the ball away. Go down. Block the shot. Williams did it. Made up for a miss.
Yeah.
Blocked it in a row 7.
Yeah.
Those things happen. But the good news is you saw a team that has pieces. Can it come together? Well, you have no idea how 18-year-old kids are going to play in February.
Yeah.
You don't know. You don't know how that's going to work. You don't know if they do have some success, how they're going to handle it, because they haven't been through that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what's going to happen if Thomas Bryant has 3 games in a row where he gets 25, 25, and 27, and all of a sudden Troy's worrying about his first-round draft pick, and Yogi's worrying about, am I getting enough shots? And Blackman's thinking, well, geez, I came back to school for this. That's
when Troy Bryant doesn't get 16 shots.
That's when big teams come together and make it work.
Yeah.
Like Kentucky, they don't seem to have any problems with that, and they got 19 guys going to draft every year. That's the point. The point is, it's either going to bring together or it's going to compartmentalize and individualize. And that's the job for the staff, is to manage these expectations. They're not going to win every game you think they're going to win, and they're not going to lose every game you think they're going to get beaten.
Well, beating Ottawa doesn't mean they're going anywhere or doing anything.
I don't think so,
yet.
But I think down the road, with the talent that is out there and the potential that is out there, you can see they can give some teams problems on any night, any given
night. Absolutely.
And you can see there are spots and things Tom Crean talked about. I'm going to watch the film, see what we can get better at. There are times when there's too many open threes, there's too many open shots, where good teams will put this team to the sword. So it's very interesting, and that's what you need to be. You need to be interesting. Because if you're not interesting, you got to be really good or you're really bad.
Yeah, well,
in the middle.
At the very least, you had
the answer.
Better energy on the defensive end and
sure.
Not always applied
and
correctly.
If you didn't have
but
it in
you
game
can talk
one,
about that.
I'd be really worried.
Well,
if you don't have it opening night,
sure.
I'd be really worried.
Yeah,
we'll and they
see.
Did, and that's fair because
we'll
you know what it is, Dave? It's a building block of foundation. You're not saying, geez, I can't get him to guard. I can't get him up and down the court. They'd never guarded any threes, even though this team made 18 threes on us last year. You didn't see that out to lunch. You saw a commitment. Now it's backing it up and doing it consistently.
We'll
That's
see if
the
they can
part.
Do it again. Their next exhibition is Monday against Bellarmine. And then next Friday is the first game of the year, Eastern Illinois here at the Hall. Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. If you nailed Pep Hamilton as the first person to leave the Colts,
you win. The office pool.
You win nothing, but you win. And we'll talk about that when we get back. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Move over to the gridiron. Looking forward to this weekend. Colts host Denver on Sunday. 4:30 is the kickoff. 3:25 is a pregame here as we carry the Colts radio network broadcast of Denver coming to town. Of course, Peyton Manning on the other side. This is the undefeated Denver Broncos, the number one ranked defense in the NFL, and the Colts are going to try to do it without their offensive coordinator, or I should say at least without the guy that had an offensive coordinator two nights ago, as Pep Hamilton has been fired from the Indianapolis Colts, laid out, I guess, as the man to blame for the time being. It's hard to argue. The offense has not been great.
Can't fire all the players.
But you can't fire all the players, and it doesn't do you any good to fire the coach and the GM right now, but people are still trying that sort of thing. What's possibly the most interesting thing about this is what we're getting out of the writers in Indianapolis now that this has happened. Greg Doyle pretty much just napalmed the entire West 56th Street complex the other day.
Before Hamilton, was that before?
No, that was
right after.
Yeah, that was after.
Well, it took the 3-5 before the knives really came out. There was the rumbling and rumbling, and not to say that it was right or wrong, but this wasn't when you don't win. There's only two ways to go in the NFL. Either you're going up or you're going down.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of middle ground there.
The Colts are not going up.
And they're not going up. And you have to do something because here's what people don't understand. How many NFL games are there a year? There are 16. There are 8 home games. That's not a lot. You don't throw away seasons in this league and say, the hell with it, we're going 2-14 and we're going to get a great draft pick.
Right.
You don't do that. You can't do that to your fan base. You can't do that to your fan base. You can't do that to your fan base. Because if you don't have stadiums that sell out, you don't sell parking, you don't sell popcorn, these owners that have billions and billions of dollars, you can't abandon ship and just say, well, let's just wait.
Yeah.
Now, college is a different story. That is now seeped into college where you see colleges now firing people halfway through the season. The Big Ten.
Yeah, it's been a crazy season.
It's crazy. But the point is, in the professional game, it is such a finite window of time where you have guys in their prime, especially in football, where you have to make these things happen. And that takes me to where this all started. It started in the offseason. How all of a sudden did all these writers that were all these experts saying the Colts are going to the Super Bowl saying, I told you so, and they're terrible? Now, wait a second. You can't have it both ways. You can't sit there from July, August, and into September before the season starts and say, Super Bowl favorites.
Telling you how great
and then
are.
All of a sudden, well, I told you this was a bad deal, and the front office is turned. No, you didn't.
Right.
No, you didn't. You didn't do it. So don't try to sell that to me. You can sell that to the sheep that follow the headlines.
I can sell it to you because I was loud about it. I was kind of a jerk about it, in fact. Told you this offensive line was going to be no good, and they were signing too many 30-year-old guys. And now all of a sudden everybody's on that, which is great for the national media to all grab onto that. Congratulations, gentlemen. Welcome to the bandwagon.
Sometimes it is groupthink.
Well, it's very much
groupthink. How many guys picked the – you can look it up. You don't have to do it right now. Look up how many people picked the Colts to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
thousands.
Well, and again, to say it again.
And that's to beat the Patriots.
The front office was talking about this also. I mean, Jim Irsay was happy to talk about it too. So they had a part in this, but no question that everybody in the media seemed to buy off on that. But at the end of the day, they still haven't put them together up front. And they still, I made the joke on Twitter that they've got Inspector Clouseau guarding the Hope Diamond in Andrew Luck as far as the offensive line is concerned. And they're still that way. It's still beat up. They went two games with the two guys that they brought, one guy they brought in, one guy that nobody noticed they brought in, Lance Lewis.
Let me ask you a football question.
Sure.
How come Hasselbeck didn't die in his two starts?
How come Hasselbeck didn't die in
same
his two
offensive
starts?
Line, same
he got
crap.
Hit pretty good in that first game.
Still.
Yeah.
They won both of them.
Yeah, well,
he had great numbers. Not even good numbers.
He got the ball out of his hands more quickly because when you're talking about a 40-year-old backup, you're going to probably try some things a little bit differently. Andrew Luck deserves some blame in this.
So Pep Hamilton is not the Hasselbeck sees.
Andrew Luck is not blameless in this.
He's the first to say that.
As I've tried to make the point after 3.5 years now, when you continue to let your quarterback get hit and hit and hit and hit and hit all the time, and is to his own credit or fault also to hold on to it and try to make plays and continue to get hit, he's not helping that in that regard.
Well, and add the turnovers,
you're
going to
start being shaky. A guy I can't stand is Jack Trudeau, but he came out in an interview a day or two ago saying basically the same thing. The more you get hit and if your ribs are injured and that sort of thing, it hurts and you get afraid and you don't sit in there as long. I've been trying to say that for years. Quarterbacks cannot continue to get hit and be the same players. You've got to protect them. You've got to have other things going on. And they, what shocked me about the Grigson thing here is he's an offensive lineman. That's what he did. And yet he's been buying all the shiny stuff and bringing in all the shiny stuff, you know, at the outsides
to try to give weapons. The problem with the signings aren't the signings. It's the lack of production from the signings.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the game...
Trying isn't great, but trying isn't doing it.
The game on paper for a lot of fans is fantasy football. Let's be fair. It's a trillion-dollar industry. Everybody's got a team.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not how the NFL is made. And you don't win in the league buying names. You don't win in a lot of things by buying names. You buy quality. And there have been some quality guys that have been brought over that have done done a nice job. It's not like it's been completely awful.
You can't miss them all or they'd all be even worse.
You are what your record says you are in the National Football League. And 3-5 isn't good enough. Your quarterback isn't good enough. The scheme isn't good enough to put him in places where he can excel. The execution of the guys running the scheme isn't good enough. You can't fire the players. Hamilton, you can't fire head coach here, in my opinion, because I don't think Pagano's that guy for that job right now.
I'd be surprised right now if Chuck Pagano has his job after the season.
That's different because just going to mention he didn't get extended because of whatever reason.
The way things are going, there's just
that's kind of admitting more failure.
There's a funk that I think at the end of the year, you know, we'll talk about it, but at the end of the year, I think you probably got to get rid of all of it. And I've been saying for the last 2 years, that's got to start with the general
manager.
Peyton
Manning was 6-10 in his fourth year in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Look it up. That's a fact.
The coach.
Here's the other problem.
Playoffs.
There's two things to do in the NFL. Win now or build for later. That's it. You got two choices, right? You stock up on draft picks and hope like San Francisco. San Francisco was terrible 6 years ago. Well, what'd they do? Joe Staley, load up the line. Yep. Iupati, load up the line. Frank Gore, get all these other playmakers, and then get lucky with the quarterback. Mm-hmm. How bad was Seattle before Russell Wilson was there? Awful? 7-9 with Hasselbeck going to the playoffs?
They also went offensive line and defense with their draft.
Interesting angle.
Not a lot of free agents, guys or
trades. Did the Colts get good the first time with Manning? Tarik Glenn?
Yeah. I mean, it was a lot
Harrison,
of draft picks.
Edger and James. But where do you get those draft
Remember,
picks?
Remember, we traded Marshall Faulk away.
To get a better draft pick.
In his prime.
Yes.
And we ended up with Edger and James because
you
of
did. Him. Marvin Harrison was a teens. Dwight Freeney was a teens.
Exactly.
Reggie
right.
Wayne was a 20s.
Like 11. Reggie was in the
Dallas
mid-20s.
Clark was a late.
Mid-20s.
Yeah. So you got, I don't want to say lucky.
Well, you did him. You got him right.
You got him right.
He got him right.
Because those guys performed when you had him.
And again, there's a philosophy in just about anything that you can try. It's good to try. You have to try.
Sure.
But trying is not performing.
But the philosophy.
Trying is not getting it done.
The philosophy that was used was now. Pagano
this year.
Pep Hamilton has half a year on his deal. They had a four-year contract.
No question.
It was moves win
they,
now.
The moves they made.
It was not for the future.
In the offseason were for right
to
now.
Win now.
And Ryan Grigson has done that. I mean, again, you don't bring in Landry.
No.
And Nicole Jackson the year before, or 2 years before that, thinking down the line. You think of them right now also. I mean, they've been doing that for the last couple of years. And again, now you've got the oldest team in the NFL, according to just straight age averages. So, you went from one of the youngest when Andrew Luck got here to one of the oldest in 3.5 years.
And all your skill position players besides Andre Johnson, Gore in the 30s. And those veteran guys either haven't been given the chance or been properly used in the offense, which was interesting because I thought Johnson was well used with Hasselbeck and is almost ignored.
Well, it was one game.
Sure. And he had
one. He had a great game on his return to Houston. How much was that? I have absolutely no idea.
He must be open at some point to throw him the ball.
Absolutely no idea.
But the point was he had six catches before that and six catches in that game.
Well, how many has he had since, too? I mean, that's just it.
I don't know.
He showed up in Houston.
How do you use him for once a game? These are the questions. These are the performances that make you wonder, who's in charge of this? Hey, you're giving me these pieces on the offensive line. They stink. What do you want me to do? Hey, but I gave you Andre Johnson. I gave you Frank Gore. Make them work. So that's why it sounds like it's a complete.
That's why Pep Hamilton is out. One of the interesting points Greg Doyle mentioned was that Pep Hamilton was never a Chuck Pagano choice. He wanted Rob Chudzinski, who was on the staff, but as an assistant head coach, now he will be your new offensive coordinator.
Chudzinski was brought in after he was fired from Cleveland.
Yes,
on a special role and then evolved into the associate head coach
or whatever
correct.
It is. So, again, if you believe what Greg Doyle is saying about this, I have no reason not to, but if you believe that, then The Pep Hamilton's situation is another Grigson thing you can add on there if you're not a big fan of Grigson.
And then if you're not familiar with the situation, Pep Hamilton was the offensive coordinator for Andrew Luck at Stanford and Kobe Flaner.
We've got a few Stanford guys on this team.
Sure do. Other than some just of them Andrew playing Luck. Well, and that's not the not
Luck. Griff Whalen,
not there.
Perry.
Yeah, guys up front.
Anderson. They weren't on the defense, not the offense, but
still, guys that know that guy. So what do? You do this to shake it up. Three losses in a row, undefeated Denver coming to town, followed by a bye week and 6-2 Atlanta. It's not hard to figure out. You got to get it going now. We joked about being 3-7 a couple weeks ago. It's not funny anymore.
Let's find a way to not get Andrew Luck killed, shall we? I bet he throws fewer interceptions.
And he's got a bad ankle, so we'll see how that works out.
Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on Newstalk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming notes. We got a whole mess of football coming up. Tomorrow night, NFL football starting at 8 o'clock. Cleveland at Cincinnati, the undefeated Cincinnati Bengals. Friday night, we have the sectional championship as South hosts Terre Haute North, undefeated number 3 South in 5A. Chalk Talk at 6:30, 7 o'clock is the kickoff with Joe and John on the broadcast. Saturday night, we've got LSU at Alabama, only the biggest game of maybe the season, but certainly of this calendar weekend. 7:30 is the pregame for that game. On Sunday, we've got a pair of NFL games, starting with our Colts Radio Network broadcast. 3:25 is when pregame starts. Kickoff will be just around 4:30 as Denver comes to town to face the Colts, and we'll have the night game, Philadelphia at Dallas, 7:30 pregame there. And then, of course, Monday night we'll be back with you and then take you into Bears at San Diego, not one of the more attractive-looking Monday night games on the season, but they'll play football, and that's why we've got them on the air. 333-2665 is the phone number. Before we leave the Colts, short-term, long-term, does the Pep Hamilton thing get anybody's attention? Is really the entire story at this point in time. You got Denver coming to town, is undefeated, the best defense in the league, but Peyton Manning is kind of struggling. He had a great game the other day. But it's just like the Pagano Colts to look lousy, 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 and then all of a sudden upset, you know, Denver here at home.
Because they're not bad. They're going through a bad period.
They look lousy.
They do, but it's not a bad team. This was the same team as we mentioned that people picked to win the Super Bowl. You know how you have to win a Super Bowl? Not only have to beat Denver and Peyton Manning, not only have to beat Tom Brady and the Patriots, you have to also beat probably Aaron Rodgers.
Eventually.
Yeah. Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
This was not a prediction just thrown out there out of fun. So that tells me these players are capable.
Yes.
Have they performed up to their levels? No, they haven't.
No.
Can they turn it around? Yes, they can, because if Luck can turn it around, that's going to help out tremendously. But the you know what? Luck has made bad plays, but I can go down up and down the line. I can go up and down the receivers. Oh. I can go up and down the special teams. I can go up and down the defense.
They haven't won games without him. That's
they have
point.
Lost wonderfully as a group, and they have lost wonderfully together. And it stops when you turn the ball over. Why is their best offense down 27-0 and 23-6? Well, because the other team doesn't care.
Yeah.
That's why the argument is, well, then run the two-minute drill the entire game. Get tempo. Do something different. Well, we'll see what Chudzinski does. Can you run and pass the ball? You have to do both in this league. Luck has shown you a great fourth quarter. Lost. Why? Yeah. Everything had to be perfect coming back. The defense played great, except they didn't. They played really well. How many touchdowns did they give up that game? Two?
So prediction?
Two? The Colts?
Yeah.
I thought they'd cover on Monday night, and they did. I told you it was going to come down to field goal kickers. I got the wrong kicker. Got the wrong kicker. The Colts against Denver's defense?
Yeah.
It makes absolutely no sense for them to win the game. Whatsoever. So the Colts win the game.
Honestly, I do too.
They win the game.
Makes no sense.
Ugly.
It's going to be 14-13.
Sure.
Colts.
I 13-10. Yeah. Ugly. Just ugly.
Because they won't score a lot of points.
No. The game will
Denver's
be played
defense.
Between the 35s.
And here again comes in where their defense actually has had some good stretches, and certainly against the running game. And Peyton Manning, look, we love him, but the arm is not what it used to be. It'd be just weird enough. Moving to the local game here as the Hoosiers face the Iowa Hawkeyes. The Hoosiers now after their bye week have 4 weeks to win two games. It would appear that at Maryland and at Purdue would be the easier of the two than at home against Iowa and Michigan. But my opinion, I think you got to win one each, one on the road and one at home, which means you got to win one of these next two. My theory is the better chance is next week against Michigan. I think there's just more that's actually a little bit wrong with Michigan than there is with Iowa. Keep in mind, this is an IU football team that makes its own mistakes, hurts itself in a lot of situations. Iowa is a team that will take advantage of that and probably will not hurt themselves in response, whereas Michigan will turn the ball over to you just as much as you'll turn it over to them, too. So there's a little bit of that. But this week, to me, a team that likes to run the ball and then hit you over the top with play action, how often do we see these young safeties getting beat? And a team that, again, does not turn the ball over itself, runs the ball very well itself, this has is a great run defense.
This is old-fashioned Big Ten football.
This is a really good team. This is not a great, unbelievable, one of the best of all time Iowa teams, Big Ten teams you've ever seen here, but it is a really good team, and I just think it's too solid and does not hurt itself enough. I think IU struggles this week. I think they'll stay in the game just like they have in most every game. I mean, they're not going to get their doors blown off because Iowa doesn't tend to do that. But I think, you got one of those over the safeties at a key point is going to be the difference.
Nope, and Iowa's defense has been stout. They've given up over 20 points once, and that was 24.
They're really good.
They are. And a game where Indiana has to be disciplined, where they have to make sure. Off a bye week at home, I think the fire should be there. You know you only have two home games left. You know
you had a chance, if you want, to put in some new things on offense.
This is the first time since 1991 the Hoosiers have played three top 10 teams in a season. Mm-hmm. So it's another challenge. It's not going to be hard to get up for Iowa. They're ranked 10 in the country. You've had a week off. You should be chopping at the bit, raring to go. And that's, again, this is going to tell me where this team is. With four games left to play, a third of their season, and they have to win two of them, how they come out and play, which hasn't been a big problem.
No,
wasn't a problem with Ohio State. Wasn't a problem with Michigan State. Can they kick the door down and announce their presence? That's the next stop.
So give it to us.
Of course I'm going to pick the Hoosiers to win. 28-24, somewhere in there. It's going to be late. It's going to be dramatic because I don't think we know any other way.
I'll flip it on you. I think Iowa wins 31-26.
Still get 26 against them. I like that.
Yeah.
26 will give them a chance to win, Dave. I'll go with you there.
IU's got an offense. I mean, let's be fair
there.
And they've got an extra week where they could throw some extra things in there to try to
screw
them up. And that certainly helps, no question. Got to take off, folks. That's what the music means. We will be back Monday, so tune in then. NFL football tomorrow night, sectional football Friday night. So tune in for all of that, and we will talk to you Monday. You've been in the zone.